Okay, good morning. Tuesday, October 22nd, 2024. A couple of things. I didn't actually need to wait until the recording for this, but one is what was the first? Well, one is that I finished recording the audio version of my new book, Sought Through Meditation, and the engineer says somebody's supposed to listen to it to make sure there aren't any really bad, like, technical glitches in it. So if there's anybody who wants to volunteer to listen to it, I knew it was going to be Eleanor. So, okay, Eleanor and Anne, I will be in touch with you both, and we'll figure it out. If you've ever had a chance to record an audiobook, you know that it's somewhat grueling. It's a lot like work. Just reading for 5 hours out loud, and also it makes you appreciate people who actually read in public for a living, like TV people. Like, it's actually really hard to get it to do it right. Anyway, there was something else I was going to say. Of course, I can only remember one thing at a time, so I may have to come back to that, whatever it was. We'll sit for a little while, we'll talk for a little while, and yeah, I think a good topic for today, actually one that's one of my big ones for meditation. So all right, so settling into your posture. Always really a key aspect of our practice that sometimes doesn't get enough attention. And I don't mean like sitting like a good boy or girl, but more just about feeling how you're holding your body. And seeing if how you're holding your body is conducive to mindfulness, just to your own mental clarity. So rather than thinking of it as a right or wrong, being good at sitting or at posture, rather to tune in to how your posture feels. How you're holding your body. And does that feel as if the mind is clear or relatively clear? And so then just attuning to the feeling of sitting and letting your body soften, having a sense of kind of arriving and settling. We don't need to rush into meditating, think that we're just going to take a 90-degree turn and suddenly be concentrated or in some special state. It's generally just a gentle settling, connecting. And feeling the breath moving in the body. And starting with just a general sense of the breath, not aiming at a particular point of sensation at first, but just feeling how the body is breathing. When the breath has a natural calming on the body, if we Just allow it to move naturally, and if we bring attention to that movement. You might let the breath just stretch out a little bit. Not straining or pushing, just kind of relaxing the breath. And when you are ready, you can start to focus more precisely on one area of sensation with the breath, either at the nostrils or the belly. So here we are. Narrowing the field of attention, or at least for a few moments, and this more narrow focus tends to help things to settle. A little more. It's natural that the mind will wander when we try to narrow the attention or concentrate on one thing. The habits of thought are persistent. But we don't want to be in a antagonistic relationship with thoughts. So it can be helpful to actually widen the attention a bit so we have the breath as a focal point, but we're not excluding other aspects of experience. We feel the body might be aware of sounds. And then we see thoughts. That's just another aspect of experience, sensation, sound, feelings, thoughts. Thoughts are appearing and disappearing in this space of mind. Breath and body tend to ground us a bit. They act as a anchor or a point of return when we get completely consumed in thought. Come back to breath. as a focal point for a little while. But there's a sense in a way of playing with awareness, letting it be open, letting it be more narrow, just responding to the mind states and tendencies as they arise. When we try to force the mind into one mode, it tends to create more tension. So we have more of a f sense of flexibility. We use our intuition to guide us and how to respond to each moment, how to be present, how to be skillful in our meditative approach. And this process is informed by kindness. That is, if we are finding ourselves getting agitated or distressed or uncomfortable, we don't try to push, rather bring more softness. Or acceptance, gentleness. Not turning meditation into a task or a challenge, but a gift to ourselves. All right. As I was recording my new book, there are some guided meditations in the end, and then I said to the engineer, "Well, we need a bell at the end." And so yesterday he sent me, "Here, I got a bell." Ding! I'm like, no, here." So I recorded my bell and sent it to him. So. I've been I'm taking a class, which I think the last time I took a class was around 2009 when I took James Barras's Awakening Joy course. It was after that that I started playing golf because I determined that that would make me happy. But maybe anyway, I'm taking the Anapanasati course. That Anallio offers, and Walt is actually, they have like small groups, and Walt is the facilitator of the small group, so it's a good turnabout. But I was thinking this morning about what a bad student I am. I'm not a bad student, a difficult student, let's say. That I have always been. I went back thinking about how I was in college, and arguing with professors. Anyway, so it's that, and I've talked a lot here about Anapanasati, which is mindfulness of breathing, or Ana in breath, Ana out breath, so mindfulness of breathing in and breathing out. Sati is breath or mindfulness. So, and so it's something I investigated a lot, and it's sort of strange because, I dove really into that practice, I think 3 years ago, and then started to write about it, as I tend to do, and then wrote a whole lot about it, and then, worked with that, and I actually that what I wrote, I met with Ajahn Pasno about that, and then. I went on the long retreat last fall, 6 weeks, to kind of just to explore and try to go deeper with the practice. And in a way, it kind of blew up for me in a way. Like I kind of, the Anapanasati is these 16 steps, and I kind of lost interest in it as a structured step-by-step thing. And, because I came to view the steps as just organic aspects of meditation that kind of will unfold if I just stay present and keep working with mindfulness. But I guess I don't know, I lost my juice for it, which is sad. I feel like, I'm in confession here. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned, it seems bad. I feel bad about it. But so it's interesting going back and like going through this course, and they're like, and sort of asking you to like go through it in this way. And I have a very hard time like doing that, going through it in that way. And I'll say, this is maybe a little more than I was planning to talk about in terms of my own practice, but as you, again, people who've been with me know, like I kind of teach out of my own experience, and certain, I've been doing this practice since the fall of 1980 is when I first took a class in Vipassana meditation. And I've done it that whole time. I mean, as most people know, like I wasn't sober yet, but still I went on retreats and I was practicing it. And in those 44 years, I don't even want to call it evolution, because evolution suggests like progress. And I'll just say, there's just these, it just changes, right? It keeps changing. I mean, to state the obvious. But I've gone into some different spaces with my practice for and I mean, for instance, I'll talk about the gatha's practice that Thich Nhat Hanh teaches, where you have the five phrases: in, out, deep, slow, calm, ease, smile, release, present moment, wonderful moment. I left one out, I think. Anyway, they're all in my book. Most of my books have that practice in it, and that was my I learned that practice around 1988, and I did it for about 5 years. That was like my main practice, and and then it ended. It's like then it stopped being my main practice, and it but it led into something else, and I got into Ayakema's. She they call it jhana practice. I hesitate to call it that these days. But concentration practice that I did, that was my main focus for over a decade, and then that just stopped. And I can't explain it exactly. It's like you play it out, I don't. The same thing sort of happened with Anapanasati practice, relatively quickly, just in about 2 years. I kind of got really into it and really explored it, and then it just kind of like, oh, that's not happening anymore. So I don't, there's no real point in telling you this, except I guess to me, the teaching out of that is to trust and follow your heart in terms of your practice. Don't get too stuck in like, I should be doing it this way. A lot of teachers will say, oh, this is the best way, and you should do this, and this is how you attain this or that. But you have to, your own process has to unfold, and only you can sort of know what that means. The most important thing, and I say this in my new book, is just don't stop. Just keep going. Just keep practicing. And yeah, ideally, keep spending more time on it. Again, this is like one of my little themes, which is that time is the irreplaceable factor in meditation. We get very technique oriented, and this is another risk of the Anapanasati. Oh, I've got the technique, right? I'm going to do the practice that will lead me to this. And it's like, maybe, but what will really make things happen is if you sit for a longer time, and if you go on a longer retreat. And our friend Anne, if you don't mind me saying, just came back, just sat for a month, and it was the first time you sat for a month, and it was like kind of mind-blowing in a way, right? Like there's stuff that just happens when you put in time. And I don't care, I think teachers tend to be very technique oriented, and Westerners were very scientific. Well, what's the best meditation? All that crap. Sorry. Calm down, Kevin. Time. Put in as much time, and everything will unfold. More will be revealed, right? And here I'll bring this back to recovery, so that we can, say that this is a Buddhist recovery meeting or gathering. How do we define success in recovery? By time. And we know there's people who don't really, get very far in their recovery. They just don't drink and use or whatever. But if you stick with it, and of course you have to be engaged in the process, whether it's 12-step process or any other kind of process that you're working with. But it's the time that's the irreplaceable factor. You can't get extra sober by working the steps harder or something silly like that. So just, it's just my encouragement, I guess. It wasn't really what I was going to talk about, but I rarely do stay on a topic. So, but what I was going to talk about is It is something that's in Anaglio's book. Bhikkhu Anaglio is the author of this book on mindfulness of breathing, and he's a Buddhist scholar and a meditative adept, I would say. So a tremendous combination of skills, of abilities, characteristics, and so he addresses a topic that I think is really central to meditation, in a couple different ways, a couple different times. And it is the question of how much we meditate with a singular focus as opposed to an open awareness. And actually, I think I'm going to read the second quote that I have here, because it really is kind of the key to this. He says, "Meditation does not invariably require a thought-free mind." And here we're at a certain point in the Anapanasati. So he's referring, he says, "Instead, with the present step, we can learn to be aware while thought activity continues. Once this has become, so to be aware, even as thoughts are happening." Okay. "Once this has become a matter of personal experience, our meditation practice becomes relieved from the burden of trying to force the mind to be still so that we can finally become real meditators." So this, I think, is the most common misconception about meditation, that we need to force our mind to be still to be real meditators. Rather, he's saying, we can learn to be aware while thought activity continues. Now, this is not something that just, you get, because it's a subtle thing. And, it's much easier to give meditation instructions that are very like this, do this, do this, do this. But our minds aren't built like that. Our minds are not divided into boxes. Our minds are not things that we can turn on or turn off. And so becoming a meditator means becoming more familiar with the nuances, subtleties, complexities of these mental processes, of the attentional process, the process of attention, and learning to play with that. And it certainly takes time, and it really helps to sit a retreat to where you're, well, just as it retreats allow the mind to get quieter, but maybe more important, they reveal to us, because we're trying to pay attention all the time, they reveal to us the many different mind states and variations of sort of attentional strategy, if I'm not sounding too technical. So Anaglio says, instead of trying to force the mind, to be still, says, instead, almost like a mother who is watching her children play without any sense, without sensing any need to become part of the game, we can be at ease watching the frolics of the mind without getting involved in them. So if you've ever been meditating and found yourself laughing at what was going on in your mind, that's what he's describing. It's like I mean, this happens to me pretty much every day, at least once or twice, that I go, ah, really? I was just thinking that. Or, oh God, not, ugh, really? Ugh. Yeah. And it's just this noticing your thoughts. If you're noticing your thoughts, it means you're not identifying with the thoughts. not wholly, at least. He says, when we let go of the strain and tension created by often vain attempts to force the mind to be still and simply remain aware of mental activity, as a result, the mind tends to become more and more calm on its own. So here you go. And if you're wondering, like, what's the point of this? The mind tends to naturally become more calm when you do this. It's almost counterintuitive, but it's because the thing that first of all, the reason that forcing the mind to be still doesn't work is that forcing is an expression of aversion, right? One of the five hindrances. It's also, a form of craving, another craving for it to be still, or aversion to it being busy, however you want to describe it. But you are, by definition, then acting out one of the hindrances, and the hindrances tend to disturb the mind. So it's this tricky thing of being able to kind of sit there and go, oh, this crap going through my mind, it's okay. Hi, crap. I'm not, go ahead. All right, fine. If you really want to, fine. I'm not going to stop you. And it is kind of that thing of, how toddlers, scream and yell partly to get you to freak out. Like, their way of controlling they don't have much control in the world, but one thing they can do is make their parents upset. So that's like a form of control for them. So when you just go, like, I'm not playing this game with you at the time. I'm not getting upset. I am putting you in your room. I am taking away your toys. There are consequences, but I'm not getting upset. You're not getting me. So when you don't react to your mind's own toddlerness, which our minds sort of are, then it doesn't sort of, nothing feeds it. It can't sustain that kind of energy. So I'm going to go back now. So if you're familiar with the Anapanasati, he's talking there about the second tetrad, which is about feeling tone, but somehow talks about mental activity. One of the mystifying things about the Anapanasati, but so the second tetrad, for those who are, following along, and if familiar with this, parallels the second foundation of mindfulness, which is feeling tone. So his basic idea here is that the feeling tones trigger thoughts, right? And that's a whole other topic for another day, but But back in the first tetrad, which is just on body and breath, he has a section called modes of attention. So this is, I have time for this, right? Yeah, okay. So in the first tetrad, here I am like telling you like that I don't do this practice anymore, but anyway. Here are the four steps of the first tetrad: being aware of the long breath as you're breathing, being aware of the short breath as you're breathing. So that's, let's just say, becoming really like focusing in on the breath and really being present with the sensations of breath. But then the third step is opening up and being aware of the whole body and the breath. So that's a shift in what he calls the mode of attention. And it's a key shift. right? Because you're going from, I'm meditating. Here's my focus, my breath. That's easy. I mean, easy in terms of I know what's going on here. Now I'm making a shift that I'm going to be aware of two things instead of just the breath. I'm going to be aware of the breath and the whole body. And this is kind of, how do I do that? Oh, well, you practice, you fool around. Just see if, just check it out. It should be said, or it can be said anyway, that now the rest of the Anapanasati Sutta, which we call the Sutta on Mindfulness of Breathing, is about being aware of the breath and something else at the same time. So only the first two steps are just involved with the breath, and everything else is a combination of that. You could say two things, but there's an argument to be made that there's a whole cumulative process. But let's just say you're aware of the breath here and the whole body. So this is part of what he's talking about not just focusing, trying to stop thoughts by being concentrated on the breath. So this is what he says. He says, he divides these into two different modes of attention, which one he calls focused attention, which is the narrow focus on just the breath. And the second one is peripheral awareness. He says, focused attention and peripheral awareness, considered on their own, make distinct contributions to our mental experience. Whereas focused attention picks out one aspect and thoroughly processes it, peripheral awareness involves a more receptive, open, and inclusive perspective that enables seeing things from a distance, as it were, and in their relationship to each other. Due to its powerful thrust, focused attention can more easily fuel tendencies to fixate. At the same time, it also facilitates a more thorough analysis of the chosen object and provides more depth of information about it. Peripheral awareness is less prone to trigger fixation at the price of potentially remaining more superficial and imprecise. I'm going to go back and talk about these things, but I want to read a little bit more. He says, focusing on the breath alone to the exclusion of everything else might at first allow us to dip in deep, but we also get more easily lost, which is a surprising idea, but one that I experienced. This is because the tunnel view that results from such exclusive focus makes it difficult to notice when a diversion is about to lead to a displacement of attention. With some degree of peripheral awareness maintained, however, even though the initial plunge is less deep, the advantage is that potential diversions can be noticed when they enter the edges of our field of awareness, and thus before they have successfully captivated our attention. So, just to speak to that last idea, my, image for this is that you are watching if you were using just focused attention without peripheral awareness, it's like you're watching the front door with such focus that you don't notice someone slipping in the back door. And this is kind of what it feels like when you're meditating, at least for me, like breath, breath, breath. And then all of a sudden I realize like my mind is off doing a whole like thing. I'm completely gone. But because I wasn't like keeping this big picture. So, and then this, then I want to go to this term fixate, which, again, like has a resonance for addicts, right? Due to its powerful thrust, focused attention can more easily fuel tendencies to fixate. So this is the one of the real risks in meditation, and particularly on retreats, there's a condition on Buddhist meditation retreats called yogi mind. It's when you get obsessed with something to an unwholesome degree, something unhelpful. I'll describe how this happened to me one time. I was on a month-long retreat in 2004, and in the morning after Jack Kornfield gave guided instructions and was taking questions, a young man stood up in the back of the room and started to scream at Jack. And this was like a fair amount into, at least a week, could have been 2 weeks into the retreat. And you can imagine that's very disturbing. He was obviously having some kind of he was decompensating. I love that word. A phrase or word, you know, something was happening, and hopefully he was taken care of. I went back to my room, and I started to think that what if he went and got a gun and came back to Spirit Rock and started killing people? And then my mind just went, and for hours, literally, I didn't leave my room. And I just fixated on this idea, right? I mean, I was a couple weeks into a meditation retreat, and it took me years before I came to understand what yogi mind is. Yogi mind is concentration without right view and right intention. It's the thing about concentration, you know, people really think, oh, concentration, that's like so great. But concentration, if it isn't guided by right intention, is unwholesome and can be unwholesome and can be, in fact, dangerous. That, you know, well, you could say that a panic attack is a form of concentration. You know, depression can be a very concentrated state. You're very focused on something painful. Something unhealthy. So it's real. This is, you know, first of all, that's like the far end of the spectrum of the risk of fixating with concentration. But less far out there is another risk that I see, which is essentially that people go on retreat and all they're trying to do is get concentrated and stay concentrated because it's very pleasurable and it feels spiritual. It feels spiritual, like, and, you know, which is like, it's interesting. Like, oh, what is spiritual? Well, spiritual is not a feeling, you know. Spiritual is a viewpoint. It's an insight. It's a way of being in the world. But because it feels so magical, people get fixated on it as, oh, this is what meditation is, and this is what it's the purpose of it is, and this is what I want to keep doing. So I will now verge into my latest fixation, which is this is one of the reasons why people are being drawn to plant medicine instead of meditation, because they can get the same mind state without having to meditate for 10 days. And, you know, they can just go on their ayahuasca retreat and then they get the whole feeling of being spiritual and enlightened. And anyway, I'm sorry. I'm a little too, you know, caught up in that idea. So I want to come back to this simple idea, focused attention versus peripheral attention. And I want to really encourage you, if you don't already do this, and if you've never played with this, to really see if you can work with developing more wide, or as Analia calls it, peripheral awareness, rather than just trying to be focused on the breath, and to notice if you have this idea or habit of thinking like, oh, I have to get rid of my thoughts, you know, But rather that, oh, you can be just like that mother observing the kids playing. Okay, my mind is playing, but it's doing its thing. It's okay. I'm here. I'm in my body. I'm breathing. I can feel my breath. I'm not like shutting everything out, but I'm present. I'm here. And that I think you will find, and I know many people here have experienced this, is a much more pleasant state, is a very easeful state. There isn't like a striving in it. I'm not trying to get somewhere. And at times you'll come to lose it completely and you'll be completely spaced out. And then you come back and you're like, oh, okay. I was gone. Rather than like, oh, trying to cling on to it. So I hope that held together in some sense. I remembered the other thing I was going to say besides whatever I said that I remembered I needed to say. But the other thing I wanted to say is that we're going to turn this, looks like we're going to turn this class into a podcast so that in the future, you'll just be able to, if you miss a class and you want to listen to it, you'll just be able to go on Spotify and go like Kevin Griffin's podcast, boom, and you can just listen to it. And we'll have that. I don't know if we'll get all the old ones in. Yes, probably, maybe. But in an ongoing way, this will just be available to listen to. And you won't have to like go to my website to find it and download it or go to YouTube and just be like right on your phone. So I don't know if that's good or bad, but it's where we're aiming. So a few minutes. Thank you for your attention, and we do have a few minutes left. And I don't have to stop at 11 today. Steve J. Oh, I should mention since you're up there that we are just opening the February retreat. It's going to be open for registration like now. I haven't put the link on my website, but if you're familiar, it's Greg Pergament is going to do the registration and that information. I'll send out an email maybe before my knee gets reconstructed and maybe after,
I've
but
already told Greg, he's already got my room sold.
yeah, I know you're already in, and there are a few people here who are just sort of, we assume that unless they're incapacitated, they will be with us. Go ahead, Steve.
Just wanted to, this was just came at the perfect time because I've been feeling like I've been forcing my meditation, this whole idea of trying to stay focused on the breath just because of what's going on in the country and what's going on around the world. And I found myself getting really frustrated. And my mind does what you're talking about naturally. So thank you. I just really appreciate that because sometimes these things come along right. It's the perfect time. I'm just going to let that free flow and enjoy it. It's going to be what it's going to be, rather than get frustrated and go, why am I doing this? This is getting to me.
Thanks. And yeah, when I sort of started to play with this kind of meditation, I wasn't sure if it was, authorized or not, sort of. But yeah, it was like, well, this feels right, So eventually, the closest thing that I've encountered, at least when I first started to practice like this, that kind of paralleled this in terms of meditation instructions is Joseph Goldstein's Big Mind meditation. That's something you can check out on Dharma Seed and
Thank
PB. Thanks,
you.
Steve.
Maybe. Yeah. My other identity. Hi.
Hi.
Good day. I just wanted to say that I'm so glad. One of the things I want to say was I'm so glad I stuck with the practice because
My understanding was for a long time, long time, but that's we focused on an object, right?
Yeah.
Even I learned choiceless attention, but I didn't quite understand what it was, you know,
Yeah. Right.
or how to do it. And so, but to gradually learn through time and teachers, thank you, and that to me now, it's really all about tapping into awareness and being with the breath in awareness, with awareness. I don't know what I say. I can't explain, but
Yeah.
this holistic view. And I think, and I did learn whole body breathing early on, and I think that's a great gateway entry point into being with the breath, the whole body breathing, this holistic experience with the whole body. It's a great, for me, it was a great, because I did that for a long time until that widened out into
Yeah.
what it is now. And the other thing was, you said about you make a parent, you make, you know, toddlers make try to make a parent upset. Well, that is true sometimes. I thought to get their attention, I thought they just really want the parents' attention. I mean, when you have twins,
Yes.
from the get-go, you know, from conception, they want your time. So, the mind, like the habit mind, wants to like hog, like all of it, you know. It's just like, oof.
Yeah.
So, I love that image of, because I have that experience of being a mother, right? And with the kids and being with them, but not like in it. Just it was this quiet, these quiet times at home, you know, like beautiful. Never thought of that as meditating, but I didn't have a phone back then, so I couldn't like look on my phone, you know. So
Yeah.
anyway, thank you for bringing in Anolio's focused attention and peripheral awareness. I love that. I love it's like hanging on the skeleton, you know.
Yeah. Thanks, Anne. It's nice to have you back.
Be
Uh,
back.
and so there was a question about the retreat. So we've been teaching these retreats in Northern California. Really, I mean, I started teaching them in 2004. We're now at a different center, Redwood Glen, which the home of the worst food in Northern California. So it's a great practice of
Sure.
it's really the Ajahn Chah, it's the Wat Pananachat of or the Wat Papang of Northern California. It's February 25th to March 2nd, so it's I think that's right. It's 5 nights. Could be February. How many days are there in February? Right. Anyway.
It's leap year, 2021.
Yeah. Oh, is it leap? No,
No,
this
it's
was
not.
leap year. So it's the 25th to the March 2nd. So that's 5 days. I mean, I can talk more about what retreats are like, but everybody should come. Although there's not room for everybody, so everybody we'll try to fit you all in. You can stay in the cabin. I also want to say that if you live in a battleground state, get the hell out there and volunteer. Thank you. My daughter just headed to Pennsylvania, so she's working in she's in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, knocking on doors. If rather than trying to answer everything about the retreat, I'll send out an email to this group as soon as I can get that organized, and you'll get all the information. Robin, hello. Now I can't hear you. It looks like you're, oh yeah, you are still muted, sorry.
Wow.
There we go.
It slid over. Thank you so much. What a wonderful, amazing meditation and teaching. I so appreciate it. I was wondering if, because there was a lot of messaging chat going on about what book are you reading?
Oh, yeah. Sorry
For
about
me
that.
and for future people on YouTube, maybe you could hold it up and say
Yeah.
what it is.
So it is called Mindfulness of Breathing.
Oh,
It's
that's
by.
backwards.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Sorry. Does that help? All right. I'll put it in the chat. It's Mindfulness of Breathing by Bhikkhu Anilayo. And Bhikkhu is just means monk. And that's Bhikkhu Anilayo, Anlayo. Kaboom.
And I have never been on a retreat, but if I go on one, I would love for it to be with you guys. Is 5 days too long for my very first time?
Absolutely
No.
not. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect
It's I'm it
entry.
scares the shit out of me, honestly.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, we're all scared.
I'm sorry. I haven't
Oh.
muted myself.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah,
We're all
you
okay,
love to
thanks.
have
I'll be quiet. Thank you. Love you all.
Yeah, the idea of being, in a, it's not silent, but there's a bunch of quiet time, being with your own mind and not having, control over your life or over your, environment. It's kind of scary, but it's really a rich experience, a lot of benefit comes out of it.
Well, and we have dialogue too, right? I mean,
Yeah, that's
there's
right. With
dialogue, time to share, time to
yeah.
get it
Yep.
out. That's the
Yep.
unique thing about this retreat, is that it's not completely in silence. There is select moments during the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're which means you might be less likely to get fixated. So there's that. But others might say, well, you won't develop as much concentration, but there are many forms of concentration. And one pointed concentration, yes, you're not as likely to develop that, but open spacious concentration, which I view as actually more beneficial, you are likely you can develop that quite naturally on this in this form. Deborah.
Thanks, Kevin, for the metaphor of a mother watching children play. I really enjoy that. It also reminds me of like equanimity for one's
Yes.
thoughts, just that sense of observation. But I really want to know what you did with your yogi mind when you thought about the loose cannon with a gun. Like,
Oh, I did nothing. And I actually saw the next day, I saw Jack Kornfield and I told him what happened. He said, "Why didn't you come and talk to a teacher?" I was like, I didn't think of that.
oh.
I just was like caught up in fear. And finally, I don't remember how it, I mean, it just obviously it played out, it just ended, but it was very consuming and I'm not proud of it. I didn't handle it well, but handling it well, trying to look good and be a serious meditator are not really compatible qualities. Kind of like trying to look good and being a sober alcoholic. They don't necessarily go together. I have to say that when I come to that place in that book, I immediately think of the line from the Metta Sutta, which is even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with the boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. So, yeah, I don't think of the so if I'm going to connect that to what Anali is saying, yes, there is this observing of the mind as if it were just a child playing, but the observing is done with love and protection, and there's a protective quality. So we're not just letting the mind run wild. And if the mind is, disturbed or like really, in a negative space, there's a loving and caring quality that we bring to it. So I think I'm gonna, add that to Analio, if I may. Maybe if I had his number, I'd text him. I have a, I think you should add this to the,
There's a caveat.
a little caveat, which I think is really, really important. I don't just think it is really important, because in my own practice, this is, I think this is becoming another sort of consistent theme for me, that having this quality of loving kindness there, always as a partner, really always as a partner with the mindfulness, is so important. Because just like that tendency to fixate is like kind of based on some idea of how you're supposed to meditate, the tendency to just like, well, that's just the way it is, rather than, oh, this is really uncomfortable. What's a wise and a helpful way to respond? I'm sitting here like really distressed. Oh, and again, we need to develop, because it takes time to really cultivate this quality of loving kindness naturally. But we cultivate this quality of like meeting those distressed states with kindness. So I see I've run way over and I've lost half my crowd. All right. Thanks for all everybody's just being here and like seeing all the nice comments. Thank you,
Was
Carson.
good stuff today, Kevin.
Namaste.
Really good stuff.
All right. Yeah.
Feeling
So
my journey.
I am hoping to be off any, mind-altering substances by next Tuesday. And so plan on seeing you. We'll see what, I'm sure I'll have some kind of a teaching from the
You'll be fine. Keep
Yeah,
listening.
if
You'll be
not,
fine.
he'll be amusing if nothing less.
He's always amusing.
I know.
All right, you guys.
Good luck with your surgery, Kevin.
Thanks,
Good
Carson.
luck,
Good to
Kevin.
see you.
Yes, thank
Yeah.
you.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.